I'm joined in the studio by Daniel White, who is here from White Screen PR, and he's here to talk about a fantastic new film called She Has a Name. The film is based on true life events of human trafficking. Now, I've watched part of the film this morning. I was watching it, the time just went very, very quickly because you get dragged into the film very, very early on, and it's also very uncomfortable to watch. And I was saying to Daniel, it's going to be a film that I'll have to watch in little stages. I can't believe that in 2017... human trafficking is not only happening, but it's growing in numbers. Film is based on true events. Tell us about the outline of the story.
She Has a Name is a Canadian film based on a stage play, adapted from his own stage play. So the writer from the stage version is the writer for the film. And it's actually three brothers. So it's directed by Daniel and Matthew Koeman, who are Andrew Koeman's brothers. And they felt, they kind of got the idea for the film very similar to how I discovered it, almost by accident, because they, like me, thought it's kind of a big problem, but it's either a problem that's in a different country or it's a problem from the past and it's not really a massive issue now. They were doing a documentary about something else and it kind of impacted on what they were doing. And when you do some research, like I've had to do, you realise actually it's a massive problem. As you say, it's a growing problem here in the UK as well. So She Has a Name is an independent film that's based on a real event that actually happened a few years back, where there are a number of women who were found in a water tanker that were being trafficked across Thailand, and 50 of them were dead. There was 120 women around that sort of girls, that sort of level of numbers, in a very small tanker, so think small truck. And because the truck broke down, 50 of them were just literally left to die in horrible, horrendous conditions. The outcry, as you'd expect for something like this, is what the film focuses on. So how the American government in the film were looking to uncover this massive plot, and the conspiracy of silence that surrounded it leans very much back to America and why people are covering this atrocity up. And I was really impressed with the quality of the cinematography. I was impressed with the storytelling. And it doesn't feel preachy, so it's a great independent film that stands very well and entertains on its own, and it does challenge, but you don't feel like you're being harangued or preached at too much. It's really good. Generally speaking, I remember when I was a teenager going to see Cry Freedom, at the time when apartheid was actually happening still in South Africa, and being a teenager over here, being absolutely outraged at the events that were being portrayed around the life of Steve Biko, which is obviously what Cry Freedom is about. And I think when films are done correctly and pitched right, they entertain, there's a story, but they challenge you and they leave you changed. And She Has a Name is a film which encourages audiences to respond. So you don't just sit there and you're entertained and you go, oh, that's a great film. It actually thinks, well, what are you going to do about this? You know, this is an atrocity that is happening in your town, in the UK. It's a widespread thing. It's not just in London or in big key areas. There's probably issues actually in Brentwood, in Southend, in Essex, in towns around this area. So it's a film. Yes, it does entertain. The acting, the characterisation is amazing. It's very believable. But it leaves you at the end. You think, well, what am I going to do about this? This shouldn't be happening. And it makes you angry. I watch it even now more than once, and it makes me very, very cross. Because people are individuals. And I think that's the thing that the film does as well, very well. It personalises an impersonal crime. So in the film, the girls that are trafficked, and some of them are horrendously young, talking 12, 13, 14-year-old girls who are used for the most degrading sexual acts, which is an uncomfortable subject to be watching. And although the film does move very closely to the edge, it's very gritty, it's not something that perhaps is a comfortable view, but perhaps it shouldn't be anyway. It doesn't move into titillation, so there isn't any nudity. Yes, it's very clear what they're doing, but it doesn't actually move too far into that area, if you see what I mean. It personalises that these girls had backstories, they had lives, and they had characters, and they've just had that taken away from them.
And once you're in that life, once you've been sort of sold, in effect, because that's what you become, a commodity, you can't get out of that life, and you think, well, I'd run away. You can't run away, because anybody who attempts to run away, they normally shoot, or they make an example of. There's nowhere to go. If you've got no money, and if you're far away from your original village over in Thailand, or you've been trafficked abroad, again, you've got no, there's nowhere to go. So really, that's it. Until they work you to death, or you suddenly vanish.
Yeah, and that's what happens. People just vanish. Yeah. And the statistics in the UK shocked me in that it seems that the majority of people who are trafficked over here, both boys and girls, a lot of them are English. So yeah. It is something within, and you know, it's not just foreign people being trafficked in, within our own country,
yeah.
English girls, English boys are being trafficked as well.
Mm.
But it's also Vietnamese and it is Thailand and it is... They are brought over here as well. And I live in Grays, just by Tilbury, so the dock areas. And I know, because the Salvation Army do a lot of work to this day, brilliantly, we're providing safe havens for people they discover who are being trafficked and they move them out of that. So there are some amazing groups that are doing some really, really life-changing work.
Yep.
But I think what we're looking at with a film like this is, yes, we want you to go and see the film because it's a tremendous film. As I say, the cinematography is amazing. It engages. It's a great story.
Mm.
But there is that edge of, actually, this is really happening. And three of the dates that we've got, the first date at Stratford East, there's another date in London, and then at the end of the 10 dates we've got at the moment in Brighton, we're actually doing a Q&A where either myself and or a producer are going to be around so that the audiences afterwards can ask questions either about the production itself, but also how they can get involved. The film has really, over in Canada, it's up for two quite large Canadian awards as well. It really has become a movement. It's not just about the film. It's actually some of the proceeds will go towards the groups that are actually proactively saving people's lives. Let's not be too blasé about it. So just by going to support the film, just by buying a ticket, you are actually supporting a movement which is trying to stamp this out forever. Because, I mean, it just shouldn't happen, should it?
No.
It's outrageous.
And also the way that they give people numbers is to dehumanise.
Yes.
So you feel as if you have nothing. Your name, everything's taken away from you. You are just a number in a machine.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a tremendous scene where there's a confrontation between the head of the crime lord or the crime boss. The film is a guy called Akarat, who's played by a tremendous actor called Will Yun Lee. And there's a scene where he's talking to Number 18 and saying, what could these people give you that I've not already given you? And she said, well, I had a name. And he says, I gave you a name, you're number 18.
Mm.
So there is a delusional aspect that the people who are perpetrating this crime is that they are actually selling a lifestyle.
Yeah.
And it's a myth and it's a lie. And if you're in a situation where you're in a horrendous poverty stricken situation or something else, that these people are actually going to give you a better life and they're selling you into slavery.
Mm.
And it does bring you to tears.
Yeah.
But it makes you realise, I think as well, that we are very fortunate in a situation that we aren't in that environment.
Yeah.
But I actually feel that we should be looking slightly wider open eyes, I guess, around. And you know, you don't want to be seeing everywhere.
Mm.
You know, not everybody who's running a reputable car wash, for example, at a shopping centre in the car park, is going to be a human trafficking ring.
Yep.
But some of them are.
Yep.
It's just kind of bringing this a little bit closer to home. This isn't a problem that just happens over there. It's something that's happening in this land.
Now, Giovanni, I won't try and say his surname, but it's Giovanni is the lead character, and Teresa Ting, they're the two main characters. Teresa, as we were discussing earlier, a very, very fantastic actress. Giovanni, what's his surname?
Moshi Bob.
There we go. I'm glad you said that, because I wouldn't have got it right.
What's interesting about him, and it's a film that was shot couple of years ago, so you know it's not a most recent work, and he's a very hard-working actor.
Yeah.
But he's still so passionately engaged with the film that he in Canada along with the writing and directing personnel will actually go out and go to screeners. We'll go out to screenings and we'll go with audiences, and there's workshop availability as well. So it is something that they really want to not just push as a press junket to sell the film, but to actually change people and educate people as well.
Mm.
And I'll be honest, I've not really seen that up until a film comes out, and perhaps a little bit afterwards, then people just move on to the next project.
Yeah.
But this has really got something that I think has got a life of its own.
Mm. And the thing is, it's the same way as we play unsigned artists here at Phoenix FM that are fantastic, but will never get onto the main stations because it just doesn't happen. And it's the same with film. When you've got these big films, I don't know, like Guardians of the Galaxy, they've got millions and millions of pounds. They fly people all over the world. They've got teams of people push. That's why these films get so much publicity, because they've got a massive machine. So to make sure that we can still make films like this and also produce different music, whether they be young through to old, and it's not all the same stuff. That's why we need to support independent film and independent music, because we don't, we'll lose that, and then we'll just end up with all this. Well, it's not rubbish, but it's all the same. You know what I mean? It's all the same. It's all the same. Girl meets boy, girl flies off in a spaceship, and that's it. You know what I mean? But
yeah,
we don't always want our films like that. That's why, I mean, it's great to, I mean, you've got, I know there was a film, The Wilder People, which I watched a little while ago, which had Sam Neill in it. Mm. That is a fantastic film. Probably a lot of people have not heard of that film. If you get a chance to see it, do, because it's absolutely, it's a fantastic film. I know it won a few, I think it won a few awards, actually.
Yeah, it's Sam Neill's a big fan of independent films. Yeah. I'd watch him pretty much in anything. He's great in Peaky Blinders as well.
Mm.
Giovanni Moshi Bob was in Supernatural, that's where I remembered him from. If you're big fans of Supernatural, he played the thin man, I think, in one of the episodes.
Right.
You're absolutely right. I think independent films, I think being in the British independent film market, or the British film market, has a wonderful, colourful past with Quadrophenia in Brighton, obviously the James Bond franchise, which is a fairly big thing, I guess. but it does something different. And because it's not often... It's not handcuffed to a particular production house. It's not kind of we're doing this for the mass market. You get creatives who keep control. So the directors, the writers, they're in control of their own projects, and it doesn't lose that individuality.
Yeah.
So films like My Feral Heart, which I was involved with when that came out last year a little bit, and She Has a Name, and other films like that, they have that individuality, which is doing something a little bit different. But the challenge to bring them to an audience. You don't have the millions. You don't see them on buses and taxis and billboards. And they don't have A-listers, generally speaking, involved. So audiences are still, I guess, for the most part, thinking, well, if I haven't heard of anybody in it, why is it any good?
Yeah.
And my role, my passion is to say, well, look, you don't need to have heard of actors or actresses. Look at the story. If the story interests you, you know, it's worth trying and seeing whether it's of interest to you.
Yeah.
The challenge, I think, for independent filmmakers is getting their films seen, getting them into cinemas. And I have to shamelessly plug Our Screen, because Our Screen really gave me and other independent filmmakers an answer to a question we couldn't find a real answer to, which is getting the films into cinemas. And Our Screen provide us with a platform where we can get our films into Vue, we can get our films into Odeon and Picture House in a way that we really couldn't do before. It makes my job a lot easier as well. But it's a different way of working, because people, in order for the screeners and the screeners to go ahead, people have to book in advance. And sometimes it's more than a few days. It's like a week in advance or 2 weeks in advance. Because the cinemas only get engaged when they're actually seen as well, we've got half our screen filled. It's got to be worth everybody's while, is I guess the way it works. And it's just a different way of cinema working, but it is something that means that independent filmmakers can get their film seen on big screens. And She Has a Name is definitely the sort of film you want to see on a big screen, because of the sheer level and the depth of it.
Yeah, it's beautifully shot.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a film critic, but even I was saying to you, there's a scene where one guy is boxing, but they filmed it from above, so he's punching a punch bag, and then it sort of like spins round to ground level. It's a nice shot.
Yeah.
And you don't have to do things like that, but it just makes the film more interesting when you watch.
Yeah, and it was shot on location in Bangkok and in Thailand, so you've got the wonderful mix and difference between the countryside, the beauty of Thailand, and then the gritty, dirty almost feel of the Bangkok streets and the red light districts and the clubs.
Yeah,
and they shot actually in a legitimate club. That's not a set. That is a club where the girls that are portrayed in the film. The real girls come in the evening and they actually do the work that's portrayed in the film. So there's a reality that hit the production team and the actors, that they were acting these roles. They'd finish for the day shooting, they'd be leaving, and literally as they'd be leaving the door, leaving through the door, the girls who were in these situations were coming through and doing the job. And it was a real eye-opener. And you know, it's that sort of film that gives it that reality. It's not in a studio, it's real life.